Everybody, the album is David Cross's Shut Up, You Fucking Baby. The year is 2002, and Josiah Elliott is with me.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi.
I said your name correctly, did I not?
You did.
See, it's a common sense thing, but I've effed up before, so I said it right.
Yay. I appreciate it.
We're drinking dog kombucha right now, which is blueberry-ish, the tiding behind the vinegar?
Wild blueberry.
Wild, oh, I'm sorry. We'll see. If I'd have known that, I would have had a little more respect for it. I apologize. It actually does taste good. It's weird to me, because I can't normally handle kombucha, but this is not bad.
It's got a mild flavor.
Yeah, no, it's good. So, all right, so this album comes out in 2002. Why'd you pick it, for one?
I really need to think about that for a minute, because there's so many great comedians out there, but David Cross really, that resonated with me a lot.
Yeah.
I grew up in Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in conservative Wyoming.
Of course.
You know, middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And when you'd ask me to pick an album, I was like, it just shot me back to a time when my best friend Jason and I, who worked at the local video store in Wyoming, would just drive around and listen to comedy albums.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And the first time that I felt like somebody else got it, like I wasn't quite alone, was hearing David Cross just lay into, you know, like he was a grammar Nazi,
yeah.
And he was, you know, anti-establishment, and very, he just fucking hated people in a way that you do when you're a teen.
No, it's so true, and I don't know how old he was at the time, but older than you would expect to be as angry as he remained. And I think he still remains, because he's still so indifferent to media. Like, if the man gets interviewed, like, I kind of respect that he's still, like, so staunchly anti-bullshit that it still comes across. That he's just so, he's like, no, I don't want to be here. Even on his friends' shows, when he's on Comedy Bang Bang, he's friends with Scott Aukerman, and he's still just, like, kind of disdainful for the fact that he's there. He's kind of fucking around, but he also is like,
He is, but he's not. And I think that's why, like, he's there. He's like, I'm your buddy. I like this because it's you, but also what this represents is horseshit, and you know it.
Yeah.
I like that he never loses sight of all of it. He's just got to have such a busy brain.
Right.
Because he's hitting on so many levels. Like, when I'm like, oh man, he's talking about this and this and this all at once.
Yeah. And he also hits these, he just hits these jags where he's going, and I want to know from show to show, have you ever seen him live? Because I've
yes,
never seen
I
him.
Have.
You have. Okay, so I want to know, like, from show to show, how on point he is with, like, his actual wording, or if he cares, or if there is, because it feels so impassioned how you keep that up every time and say the same words. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because that can't all be memorized. Maybe it is.
Right.
I could be full of shit.
I've only seen him live a couple times, and I don't know the guy personally.
Sure.
But from observation, and having seen a lot of comics that go scripted and I would say a lot of his stuff is unscripted, but it's all from the heart.
Sure.
Passionate place.
Yeah.
It's like he believes it hook, line, and sinker.
Mm-hmm.
He's not blowing smoke up your ass.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of in the vein of, like, Bill Hicks or, George Carlin, like, those types. Whereas, like, someone like Dane Cook or Chris D'Elia are always a little bit more scripted, a little bit more, their humor isn't quite as, I mean, there's angst behind it.
Yeah.
But it's different.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. He's one of those, and I'm actually glad you brought up Bill Hicks, because it didn't occur to me, because their styles are so different, but their perspectives are really similar, because they're both humanists who hate a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what I really love about it, is it's like, no, if you're, it's not even, there's some, like, Carlin is very much like, be a good person, at least early on. He's always be a good person, but he had a different character to represent that each time.
Right.
But David Cross is like, just be a person, is kind of how it feels like it's coming across. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's anti-racism, anti-homophobia, as you would be, but he's outspoken about it. It's not hinted at.
No.
You know?
The one where on that album when he was just at that, what was it called? The Light Up Tennessee Festival?
Something like that. Oh, God, yeah.
That only lasted for 2 years because it just went tits up because it was so poorly planned.
Right.
But he's just talking about, you know, and of course he sees this happening. Like, he, like, of course someone like him's not on the planning committee because he's too smart.
Right.
So.
And that, like, when I hear that stuff, all it makes me think of is also, like, I come from, not a conservative background, but a conservative area. I come from upstate New York, and I knew the punchline of that bit was going to be the word faggot, because I knew that's what was good, because I've been through that myself. And yeah. I just so, like, oh, it just hits home so hard, but it's also, it just, oh my God. His dissatisfaction is just so pleasant somehow.
It was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And just the way he even just describes simple things that would annoy probably you and myself, it's like, so there's a line for getting a ticket to get beer,
mm-hmm.
which took...
right.
And then there's a line for the beer.
For the actual beer, yeah.
And so he's just, you know, he's dissatisfied in noticing that, and, you know, he's probably frustrated too, so yeah. He's like, how do I cut this shit? So he asks somebody for help.
Mm-hmm.
And the response is just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, why are you asking me, faggot, or whatever. I just, and that's, I'm from Wyoming, so that, like, definitely, yeah, all the time.
Yeah. And we were talking about right before I started recording, but that you made me think of, like, how I felt, there are a lot of thoughts in this album that I thought were my own, and one of them is, I mean, actually, there's one that I never thought of as my own, but I think of every time somebody misuses, literally, I do think of his bit, every time, because if, I know that if I want to throw it in somebody's face, not that I have, and I probably won't ever, but if I wanted to, be like, I would give that whole story, you know?
He literally grew wings and ascended into heaven, and, yeah.
That's so good.
It's so good, and my friend Jason and I would, when that happened, mm-hmm. Jason was, like, super grammar Nazi guy.
Okay.
And, this was about the time where, this was in popular news, it was, these two guys, they called themselves the... What were their names? These dudes went around to national parks and corrected spelling errors.
Oh, I remember that. Yes, okay.
And were arrested and, like, banned from national parks. Yeah, I'm trying to remember their name. It was something pretentious.
Mm-hmm, of course.
But I read what they were doing, and, like, their, you know, their mission statement was, like, just so... It was like, I imagine Benedict Cumberbatch reading it. Like, just very, very, like, whoa. Like, but I was like, they have a point. Like,
sure.
International parks probably shouldn't have spelling errors. Like,
were there other albums you were listening to at the time that were hitting you, or just all of a sudden this one's like, oh my God, this is, like, he's inside my head?
I think, you know, even though I grew up in an area that was really conservative, and my family was pretty conservative,
mm-hmm.
my mom had a little bit of edge of cool in her.
Okay.
She had a great sense of humor, and she loved George Carlin in a sense.
Okay.
Like, she didn't like when he got angry or dark.
Okay.
But, like, so that type of stuff was always around. Like, mm-hmm. Gilda Radner, mm-hmm. we were forced to watch SNL and In Living Color growing up, which was wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like we really were, but my mom didn't listen to David Carr. Like, I think that there was a period in her life where I think that she, like, for about 10 years kind of tuned out anything besides what I say is right and
okay.
what I do is right, I'm the mom, like, type of a thing.
Sure.
But now I think she could probably appreciate it more.
Mm-hmm.
But she definitely kept comedy around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, hearing George Carlin, grew up listening to a little bit of Bill Hicks.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, as conservative as he was, mm-hmm. was Monty Python fan.
All right.
Made me watch The Life of Brian.
Wow.
Monty Python.
All right, okay.
And he's religious.
All right.
Believe it or not.
All right.
But he, I think he can appreciate, it's so strange that, like, they would.
Well, I mean, that does sound strange, but, I mean, I do have a lot of conservative friends who are also very much, they do shock me. I'm like, we have the same exact sense of humor somehow.
But different belief systems.
Of course, yeah, 100%, which, I mean, like, yeah, that is odd.
It is, and I think that's probably for a different podcast.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. Uh-huh.
But, yeah, and I think, who else did I listen to around that time? Howard Stern, although not a comedian.
Right.
My mom was in radio and TV, And she hid his book, like, above, like, it was, like, hidden, so of course I'm gonna find it.
Sure, of course.
So I remember, like, climbing the bookshelf and, like, a little, you know, little gnome or whatever, mm-hmm. and I just grab it, and I was, like, looking through the pictures, and, like, that's I brought upsetting. It to a sleepover.
Oh, shit.
We're in third grade. And I remember there's so much dark humor within his own book, because a lot of people that he was interviewing would come up in there. I don't know. And sure. so we listened to that.
In which you have to stand in this long line and show your ID, get a bracelet, and buy beer tickets, and then go stand in the other fucking line, you know, for another half hour. You know, like, so it's just, it's useless. Like, you know, the mayor was friends with a ticket impresario of Atlanta or something, you know. Like, come on, dude, I got a warehouse full of these tickets, man. I'm trying to help me get rid of them. Come on, man. You know. So I'm standing in line with my friends and want to buy beer, and I don't know if I'm in the line for the beer or the tickets to get the beer. So I tap the guy, it's a true story, tap the guy in front of me on the shoulder. I said, excuse me, do you know if this is the line to get the beer or the line to get the tickets to get the beer? And this is what he said. I don't know, faggot. There you go. There you go. There you go. I don't know, faggot. I don't know, faggot. What? What did I do? I don't know, faggot? What? Was it because I was sucking his cock at the time? If I was doing that, I'd say, like, that's an okay thing to say, you know, but I wasn't. I wasn't. I was just asking him if that's the right line for the beer. I don't know, faggot.
There's an edge to a little bit of everything you liked, I guess, or were exposed to.
Yeah.
A lot of, like, intentional or unintentional dichotomy is helpful, though. I mean, I feel like it might make you a better funny person. It might make you a better decision maker sometimes. Confuses some people, like it might have done me. But, you know, I feel like sometimes that makes you a good decision maker in terms of being an artist.
Yeah. You know? And I agree. I'm just going to flip this notebook, because sure. what I did is when I was listening to it, I just mm-hmm. started free associated.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
What is this? And let's see if anything, like, came up.
Okay.
If it brought up any memories or...
I do like, though, that you do have kind of a defined moment there where you're listening to David Cross, and that seemed to have flipped a switch.
Well, it was because it happened around 9/11.
Yes.
Right. When that album came out, yeah. and I think that time was a real wake-up call to anybody.
Sure.
It didn't matter how old you were, it was like... You know, it's like kind of like the first time you see your parents cry in the living, or like, you know, like sure. the first time there's a real break in your reality and you mm-hmm. see that you're a part of something bigger.
Yeah.
I think that time is such an iconic time. And then to kind of have that as your backdrop, then he's talking about a lot of the 9/11 mm-hmm. stuff. It just felt like someone was not afraid to be real.
Right. Yeah.
In a town where people really didn't want to rock waves, even if they did sure. have a progressive viewpoint.
Of course. Taken so many notes. Nobody ever takes this many notes.
Yeah, don't be impressed.
It's no, I'm impressed. It's okay.
It's mostly because I'm like, am I? Okay, so it starts, I'm like, these may be embarrassing. I did not
no,
go back.
No, it's fine. Here we go. It's okay. An oral report.
Oh, I made an observation about New York City. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know why this came up. It was like, the city of New York belongs to the citizens of New York. Of course, this is true in every city, but nowhere is it more apparent. Because he was just talking about that individualism of, yeah. like, if Gabriel wants to go rollerblading, then Gabriel's going to go rollerblading. That, and I'm like, mm-hmm. goddamn right he is.
Right?
Like, and only in New York, because New York City belongs to me. Like, this is my city.
Yeah, he's got that. That's the other thing, too, is, like, listening to it is, at least for me, I'm just... I've been in LA for 13 years, mm-hmm. and I first heard this when I lived in... Thank you so much. I lived in Chicago when I first heard this, like right after 9/11, and I just remember being like, yeah, fuck LA, and now I'm just listening to it. I'm like, shut up. Yep, I know. That's absolutely true. Shut up. Stop it. It's really painful to listen to some of it, because it's really biting. Maybe some of it's obviously exaggerated, but it's way too true, some of it.
I, you know, and the optimist in me, I'm listening to this, and I'm like, David, come on, right. You're having a bad weekend.
Right.
What, were you in the wrong part of L? Like, come on, we're a little bit, like, you know, a yeah. little bit of...
He feels like the guy who gets that feeling and then doesn't let go of it for the sake of being pure to himself and true to himself. He's like, no. I felt that way once. That's how it really is.
Right. Like living in the absolute, like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm. But in that, he finds this really strong social stuff.
That's where the humor is.
Yeah.
Because if that's your absolute and there's no other alternative, mm-hmm. it's like, well, what's funny about that?
Yeah.
Because if you have the opportunity to be like, well, let's lighten it with other things, then I don't think sure. you can really go to the darkness and find the comedy
right.
in it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. But it is funny, too, it's easier to make a lot of those jokes, too, if you have been a successful sketch comedian and stand-up and you're doing just fine. It's a lot easier to make to shit on the place you just left. You know?
It's true.
You know? But it's, I'm sure he would admit now his own bias, but that's kind of why I like listening to him, because he does evolve as the albums go on.
Well, and that's, going back to his sketch background, mm-hmm. So few comedians that I'm aware of, I mean, and you know much more about this than me, have that sketch background and the stand-up.
Yeah.
Normally it's like, we're separate, these For are sure. separate avenues of comedy, and yeah. he... I think when I was listening to his act outs mm-hmm. And his character,
oh my God.
Seamless.
Yeah.
And believable. And I'm like, this has got to come from his sketch world. He just kills it.
Yeah. His voice work is really fantastic. Like, even if the voice is a quote unquote black voice, whatever you want to call it, or if it's, I mean, he's got a whole bit about the quote unquote gay voice, yep. which is really fantastic. I really love it so much. And I'm just like, holy
Not
shit.
Not all men. Right. But only gay men.
Yeah, but only. Oh, and it's so good because there are a couple bits, specifically towards the end of that one, that are kind of heartbreaking, like where he's talking about, like, yeah, you know what? I'll just, you know, I'll, like, it just, you know, everything sucks, and I'll just, I'll make stuff harder for myself. Just like if it were a choice to speak that way, or if it were a choice. Like, it really becomes heartbreaking. Like, man, he's so emotional, but he hides it in this until the end of some of these bits.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, you're being, yeah, like, he doesn't want to talk about the emotion.
Right.
Like, it's I just must be sensitive, but, okay, let me get back to these. Okay,
sure.
So the notes, I was like, he's truthful. He's a guy, and also, this is going to sound strange, but I noticed he's a guy who has boundaries. Mm-hmm. For someone that breaks them down so much, he has really clearly defined boundaries. He's like, I don't like people that are racist.
Yeah.
I don't like homophobic people. He's like, learn how to spell.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, all like, these things were, like, really apparent to me. This is someone that has manners, that has, that likes those things.
Sure.
And, nihilist, mocks tradition,
uh-huh.
not a traditionalist. Oh, and then in the middle of that, some guy got on his cell phone in the middle of his bit.
Oh, my God.
And he... I've seen him go both ways with this. I've seen him get really pissed.
Really?
But in this one, it was such, like, he called out the guy confidently.
Yeah.
But he made no excuse for the guy either. Not right. like, oh, I get it, dude. It was just like,
mm-hmm.
I will completely destroy you in the nicest way possible for being a douche. Yeah. Well, I think he even said, like, I get it if it was, like, 15 years ago and people didn't know.
Right.
But people know.
Yeah.
So fucking turn off your phone.
It's so good.
Right. So it's like the boundaries are, but they're not. I don't, he just has, he's so interesting.
Yeah. Well, he does, he like genuinely, he's this guy who's, who could rub you the wrong way if you didn't listen to everything, if you didn't understand the humanist side of him and the fact that he just, no, I want things to work out. Like, I'm just so angry because things aren't good right now, you know?
Right.
It's kind of childish, it's this kind of childish optimism, but it's also really endearing.
It is.
You know?
It's absolutely. Notices motivations, finds them idiotic, and is very vocal about it. His act outs are involved on point. One thing I really liked is that he, as a woman, I felt like he takes a real humanist perspective. A lot of comedians, a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
will just kind of identify with their gender, and
sure.
I think that he takes it bigger than that, and he identifies with people.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was talking about the trash guy
yes.
that was, like, following the girl mm-hmm. after 9/11 oh, and hitting on her.
Yeah.
First of all, that would happen.
Sure.
So I know he's not lying.
Absolutely.
Second of all, it's that he called out the situation as, like, boys will be boys, and
mm-hmm.
this guy, I don't know, it just was a really brilliant bit to me, because I expected him to take it in a different direction.
Sure. And I actually didn't remember that bit until re-listening to it today, and I'm like, Oh, that's right. This is, like, really... It's there are things like that that are going to solidify in your brain, and it's something that I do think about when I think of catcalls. Not that I would ever be that kind of person, but if you're aware of somebody who's doing it or who does it, this is, like, this kind of touchstone for me, you know, where it's like, oh, yeah, this really smart guy that I respected had this whole perspective that nobody ever talks about at all.
Well, and his perspective is actually kind of coming into play. Like, BuzzFeed did a really cool bit that... It's not quite like his, but it's mm-hmm. it's in the same vein of where it's flipping it around. It's mm-hmm. taking a different perspective. They did If Women Catcalled Men.
Really?
Have you seen this?
I have not.
Okay, so it has a bunch of women in cars driving by guys being like, looks like those arms could put together some IKEA furniture, you know, as they drive by. Mm-hmm. And or, oh, it looks like you got a real big heart under that shirt, you know. And
that's pretty great.
It's funny. It's like not... It. What he did was made it about... even bigger.
Sure.
Like this just switched the gender role, but...
Yeah. And that's the other thing, too, is I'm trying to think, I've heard somebody else do a bit sort of about it, about the same... Caroline Ray, I think, does a bit where, like, no... I think it was her, where no proposal story starts with, well, I was walking down the street, and this construction worker yelled at me. I thought, like, so she does a very similar bit, but I like that his is just very, it's very damning, it's very clear-cut how he feels about it. He doesn't even do a cute thing. He's like, no, this actually happened.
Right.
But, like, what kind of asshole does this? And he's like, he's implying, if you're somebody in the audience who's done this or thought of doing it, like, leave the room or change who you are. That's how I do feel judged by him in a really good way when I listen to him.
Yeah,
you know?
He's like, yes. Mm-hmm. I think we all do. He kind of keeps us in check.
Uh-huh.
And that's the one thing to really love about him.
No, it doesn't matter. It's genetic. It's something that happens. You know, it's like all these fucking asshole religious people will say it's a choice, you know? Like, homosexuality is a choice. That is a choice people make to engage... in this deliciously decadent, sinful behavior in God's eyes. They get together with their, you know, hot oil rub downs and whatnots. It's sinful. And, you know, it's genetics, not a choice. There's no fucking 16-year-old heterosexual boy, confused, socially awkward, you know, acne-scarred kid sitting around, you know, in his bedroom going, God, everyone hates me. And no growth, the growth I like don't like me. And I don't know what to do. And the thought of having sex with another man, it's physically repellent to me. But, you know, maybe it's time I invited even more nonstop harassment into my life.
Delusions about LA, on point, contemptuous of religion and of the status quo.
Yeah, a little bit.
The phone call from a cranky terrorist. It's like how isolated and contemptuous he felt in LA is how I felt in Wyoming. And so I think that's when it, like, cued in for me, like... these, because he would just notice, I would so often as a teen just notice, like, you know, like, the mayor is a piece of shit. Does anyone else not see that?
Right.
Like.
And nobody else is voicing it.
No one's saying anything. Yeah. And it was, and my parents would just, they're like, don't rock the boat. Like, we're going to get in, you know, like.
Oh, no.
And I think he kind of had that contempt for shallow people. Yeah. And it matched my own.
Yeah.
And I loved that.
Were you a fan of Mr. Show before this? Had you seen it, or?
Looking back, I had seen Mr. Show. I didn't know it was him.
Oh, okay.
Until a couple of my friends, when I was, like, talking about a bit he'd done. Like, mm-hmm. I had, like, there was always this strange, there was this little cluster of people that had the similar likes and politics in Wyoming, and we all found each other, of course,
mm-hmm.
and we bonded, and I think it was actually this kid named Kevin Kinski, whose dad was the mayor of Sheridan, who was mm-hmm. awesome and not a piece of shit. He's an amazing man. Kevin Kinski was talking about the gay voice bit,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, oh yeah, and so I was like, that's David Cross, he does this bit, and he goes, oh, well, he's on Mr. Show.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, oh, and then I kind of like yeah, okay. So I got to learn more about the things I liked through other people.
Yeah. At the time, were you, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
At the time, were you a performer, knew you wanted to be a performer? Were you getting into art? What was your thing at the time?
I had always done a little bit of theater, mm-hmm. or I got advocated to like speak up in class, like mm-hmm. in class a lot. Like,
okay.
Well, Josel say what people won't.
Okay.
For my friends a lot, that was kind of the I was in the hall a lot.
That's kind of awesome.
It was now that I, you know, but at the time I was, sure. I didn't realize it was a position to be like grateful for. It
sure.
kind of felt like I was the one getting singled out a lot.
Mm, yeah. Okay.
But ultimately, yeah, it paid off.
Sure.
And
if that had been me, I would have been crying. Honestly. So I'd have been pulled out of that. I'd have been just crying all the time. I mean, I was crying all the time anyway.
Weren't we all?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah. And so I guess I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely does. No, I was just curious, like at the time, if he was you have a vivid memory of listening to him the first time. And I was just curious if it had like any effect on you as a budding or potential performer, or if it just was one of those things that's just sunk into your psyche.
I could never, ever, ever take credit like that. Like, mm-hmm. because he is so, even at that point in his career, he's so far beyond where, you know, any comedian could hope to be.
Sure.
You know, he's really one of a kind.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that would be really, I'd be like, oh yes, he's influenced me. No way! I enjoyed his stuff. I could never make a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an upward comparison.
How many pages of notes did you make? I'm sorry.
Not many. It
looked like an awful lot.
It does. It's like probably a lot. Okay. It's like...
Yeah, that's a lot.
I mean, like four?
That's an essay.
Okay.
That's an essay's worth, anyway.
And it's mostly just observations about...
Are any of these observations sort of... when's the last time you heard the album before you've just listened to it? Do you listen to it regularly, or has it been a while? No.
It had been a while.
Yeah.
So it was... I hadn't listened to it in... I would say at least 5 or 6 years.
Okay, yeah. So what... How's your own perspective changed, or how does it make you realize your own perspective has changed? I mean, does the album feel different?
It does.
Yeah.
I think it resonated with the things that you need to do with that. If you're going to break out
uh-huh.
at that age and leave, you know, because you said you were from a rural area
uh-huh.
originally. If you're, so maybe, and anyone else listening to this, maybe they can identify with this. There's that pivotal time in your life where if you're going to break out and leave, it's then.
Yeah.
It's not later.
Sure.
It's much less likely.
Uh-huh.
And I think looking back, whether it was conscious, whether it was subconscious, I cannot tell you.
Sure.
But I think this was a really big influence on, like, I've got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
There's
awesome.
Something more.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is. I don't know if this guy knows what it is.
Right.
But somebody else shares, he says it better than I could,
mm-hmm.
but somebody somewhere is getting that, and people are cheering in an audience.
Right.
And so it can't just be me that's wrong all the time in this high school,
mm-hmm.
and, you know,
yeah.
I've got to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really did resonate. And I think maybe I was more, like, kind of how he dealt in absolutes,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes you have to in comedy. Like,
sure.
too many variables coming in can cloud it up. But I think that I probably did think so-and-so is a piece of shit because they use literally wrong. Or what, you know,
right.
and they're
yeah.
stupid. And now I think I'm just a lot... I think there's so many more variables, and I'm a lot more gentle, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so much softer
sure.
than I was then.
Okay. And I like them, too. I like albums like this as signposts for... Again, for my own psyche, for that own reason, where it's like, I've grown past that. Even if he didn't necessarily believe that, and that act is there, it was great to have had.
Right.
You know, and it's a thing to help you remember part of you. Because I was legitimately getting re-angry, and getting angry that I was getting angry. I was like, no, don't.
Right.
You've learned to calm down, Jason, so much. Don't listen to him. But no, you need to continue to listen to
it's
him.
Like
because
it awakens those things.
At that time, he's older than I am now, and he's way angrier than I would expect. I'm like, oh, fuck, okay. Maybe rethink your shit for a second.
Maybe, you know? But it's also, I think it awakens those... I think what it awakens is that passion you had in that moment for
mm-hmm.
this isn't right.
Sure, yeah.
This needs to change.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who's going to stand up for it. I don't know who's, you know, I don't know. You know, and it just, there's so much emotion involved in
yeah.
it. And I think that I don't know. Does that make any sense?
It makes absolute sense. And it also, just in terms of just sheer time and the fact that maybe this hadn't been said enough, the second he says that George Bush is going to go down in history as the worst president, just a fucking, it just erupts. And I'm like, oh my God, you're right. Nobody was saying that on stage. I'm like, holy fuck. That really brings me back. It, quote unquote, dates it, but it also makes it really important.
You know? I mean, it was an important time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that time in history, he did go down as one of the worst presidents in history. Very few people, even people that supported him then, mm-hmm. support him, that could deny that now.
Sure. Do you think were a lot of people back home like him because Cheney was from Wyoming?
Absolutely.
Ugh.
And my parents were not Bush supporters.
Uh-huh.
My dad, although really conservative, mm-hmm. is a reasonable and logical guy.
Okay, sure.
And I think that he, like, my mom watched, like, I don't know if Jon Stewart was around at this time, but she, to this day, watches Stephen Colbert and, like, Jon Stewart mm-hmm. every night. And so she's very, like, liberal and with it and hip.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you can't not rub off on your spouse at some point to where he's like, wait, these guys are funny and they're, and I like Monty Python. So it's like, it eventually, he, although he won't talk politics, it's like, I think he got to the point where he was just seeing it as, this is an extreme, this George Bush guy, this seems too intense.
Sure.
Like, and I think he'd be put off by David Cross because of the language and because of the, he doesn't do emotion well.
Right.
He was a math teacher and a principal and all those things.
There you go. Okay.
So it's like very kind of closed off. But I think he would have liked Mr. Show.
Okay. So, that makes sense.
Yeah. Let's see. Safer here. That's because it's whiter here. Oh, that really, that's one thing that came up. Yeah, Wyoming was super white.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just this, like, deep-seated, like, racist. Yeah. No. It just, so that really resonated.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, they're talking about my hometown.
You know, and the shocking thing, too, is, and I've talked about this a bunch on the show, because racism is a subject I'm super interested in. By the way, that water's for you if you'd like some.
Oh, thank you.
But,
I love these little old-timey, like,
they're nice, right?
Has anyone had trouble with these here?
I hope not. I wouldn't have them back on the show if they had trouble with a bottle. That's not true. That's be rude and mean. I'm not that person. but we talk about racism a lot on here, and I think it's probably just from personal, just because I'm selfish and, like, talk about myself. But, like, I really, it's one of those things that upsets me most, especially when you're in an area where there's no black people. So how do you know from black? How do you know to hate black people? Oh, just because you've never met one.
Right.
You know, and it's just, that's, there's so much to play with. But I'm the kind of person who likes to do satire and have fun, but he'll get angry and scream, mm-hmm. you know?
And there's a place for both. One thing about, I do have, my hometown had no black people in it, mm-hmm. except there was a pastor, and pastors kind of cycle out every few years, in at least where I'm from.
Sure.
It's like they don't stay long. It's like maybe 5 or 6 years here, then they move on.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a pastor at a church in my hometown, and they had a son named Dee,
uh-huh.
and Dee was black.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, and clearly the parents are white.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my little brother coming up to me and saying, like, he got really secretive, and he whispered, and he goes, I have something to tell you. I'm like, yeah, what's going on, Matt? And he's like, I think Dee was adopted. Right. And then he looks at me, and he's like, don't tell him. What that meant is the issue was not that he was black.
Uh-huh.
Adopted was the weird thing.
Yeah.
Not black.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't, a lot of people that I knew in that town were not racist. It just, I think it felt like everybody was racist.
For sure, sure.
And that's because maybe there were a couple people like that in that town, but I certainly, like, wasn't raised with that, and my immediate friends were very disgusted by that, and even people that you wouldn't expect. Like, Wyoming's kind of a, like, I'm gonna do what I want, you do what you want, just do it in your backyard, get it, you know, just rugged individualism.
Of course.
And I think they don't give a fuck what you look like, or if you have, like,
a
hairbrush up your ass, as long as you do it in your backyard and you leave people alone.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the mentality.
Yeah.
Overall, I think there's still that darkness kind of seeps in
everywhere. Of course,
but
it's going to.
You know, like, just people, oh, fucking be like, dude, man, I'll tell you the funniest story, man. I was really fucked up the other day. I was hanging out with Jeremy, and we were both super fucked up. And we went back to Jeremy's apartment. We split this bar of Xanax, okay? And then he put on that Viking hat, you know, that he won in Vegas, you know? And he started dancing around. And dude, it was so fucking funny. Dude, I literally shit my pants. Wow. Oh, man. Oh. What did you do? Dude, I was laughing. No, I mean, what did you do with your pants? I mean, what are you talking about? No, you said you literally shit your pants. Yeah, dude, it was fucking funny. No, I know, that's what I'm saying. What did you do with your shitty pants is what I'm asking. What? Nah, dude, I didn't fucking really shit my pants. I literally shit my pants. You don't understand, man. You don't get it at all.
That's why I listening to comedy like this, I felt like it was also another just like, oh, thank God, I'm not the only person who feels this way. It's also kind of nice to have somebody, even though nobody has to justify not being racist logically, it's really cool when somebody as articulate as David Cross says the things you're feeling, and oh my God, I never would have been able to say it that way. Thank you for doing that for me.
Yes.
So I can see why it would have hit you. How old were you when you first listened to it then? You're a teenager, right?
Yep.
Oh, okay, yeah. So
it's like 16, 17.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah, so that's perfect time to listen.
Right, because you have all... It's like what you want to say as a teen is like... It comes out as like... Meh, meh, meh. It's like it's not like Tourette's. It's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Whereas like he's coming out with this polished, articulate... I'm like, yeah, that guy. Whatever he said. Mm-hmm.
He's... And there... And yeah, I hesitate to call what he does ranting, but when he'll go off on this seemingly polished just... like this the thing about
it's a fantastic
the literally,
rant
yeah. Uh-huh.
It's a rant and mm-hmm. he does it well.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite bit off this album?
This bit about Southern Baptists
uh-huh
hit home.
Oh yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
I loved it, and like he just said that there's a certain brand of crazy or something, and it was called Southern Baptists. And I'm like, someone else knows, like, yes, and he just goes to town on, and from there he kind of just, you learn about his hatred of religion, and mm-hmm. kind of, yeah, it's, I loved that bit. It reminds me, I was a pizza delivery girl as my job in high school, and I delivered to the Southern Baptist Church once. Mm-hmm. I actually think I wrote this, because it triggered that memory,
okay. And
why I loved that bit so much.
Mm-hmm.
It really resonated. I was a pizza delivery girl, and I delivered to the Baptist church. And by the way, like, the new Baptist church that had moved in, like, was mm-hmm. just on the outskirts of town, which is creepy as fuck anyway. So it's just out of town. It's, like, this massive building. And I had to deliver pizza there. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, mm-hmm. go drive there. And it's, like, no one's there. And I remember being like, okay, well, I'm just gonna go in the church and, like, hello, like, call around. No one. And then I'm, like, looking at the ticket, and it says, at the church. But I'm just... I was like, well, I'm just gonna... I delivered pizza before and had wrong addresses before.
Sure.
So, like, I'll investigate the area. Uh-huh. I go behind it, and there's a little cottage. Like, uh-huh. And I was like, oh, okay, well, there's... Maybe that's where they're living.
This is the
like,
beginning of a horror movie you're describing.
So, yeah, it's far enough out of town where, like, if I yelled for help, like, no one would know.
Right.
So, I go to... the building, and like the door is opened by this woman, and like I just remember her being in a really bad mood.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why I wrote this, but I'm like, they say happiness equals outcome minus expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I had the expectation that she'd be kind and happy to be getting pizza.
Yeah,
you know after all, she's religious, she likes to believe in God, cheery,
sure.
Maybe she had the expectation that I'd miraculously know how to find her creepy gingerbread cottage, like, behind the Southern Baptist Church. But, like, I mean, whatever it was, like, she was not happy to see me.
Yeah.
And she was just like, you know, finally. You know?
Oh,
and,
no.
Yeah, and I'm like, wait, and I was just like, she was so mean, and she had, oh, here it was. She accused me of, like, she's like, what were you doing looking around the church?
Oh, my God.
And I couldn't not. I was just like, I was looking for Jesus. I'm like, what the fuck do you think I was doing?
Right.
Like, I have a pizza in my hand. Like, seriously. Where do you think I'm looking?
Mm-hmm.
And, I, you know, I'm, throw me a bone here. And she was just like, she just kind of like she knew that I was being a little smart ass. Mm-hmm. And she, like, took my money. And then she told me, she gave me, she said, no tip. God bless.
Oh.
And then, like, closes the screen door. And, like, I don't know. I imagine she, like, turned into, like, a witch or lightning struck. I don't know what happened. But, like, it was just that moment where I was like, they are the most terrible people in the world. And he knows it. He's dealt with this.
Uh-huh. You know, it's funny, too, is, like, listening to him tell these stories, because I know, you know, since he's a married man, typically, I don't know what his, I don't know how much stand-up he does right now. He seems like a guy who would vehemently oppose being different because he's married now in his act, you know what I mean? He
right.
feels like he's like, no, fuck this, I'm going to be the same dude. But listening to him talk about, like, partying and getting, that there's that whole story about being panicked after that night of getting trashed.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit. Now, I don't have any stories like that, but I can totally relate to that nerd panic that he has when the room is black and somebody's saying, answer your phone.
Answer your phone.
Holy shit. It's so upsetting. And there's a lot of emotion in that, too. Like, he has to tell this whole story to get to the point where, like, I was vulnerable once, guys. Like, that's kind of how it feels, you know?
Yeah, he did.
Do you, all right, so you, I always ask, did you share it with a friend, but, like, a friend introduced you to it. Did you guys share other comedy after this?
Bill Hicks, we listened to Billy Connolly a lot.
Awesome.
Yeah. We were also, because I was obsessed with Billy Connolly from that point on, mm-hmm. Which I guess I had heard my mom listening to him as well.
Okay.
Like, from really early on.
Mm-hmm.
But I watched Boondock Saints, like, mm-hmm. because I was like, I want to see everything that Billy Connolly's ever done. I was that kind of nerd. Yeah. I was like, who is this person? What else do they have their fingers in?
Yeah.
And,
have you seen Mrs. Brown?
No.
Kidding. It's heartbreaking. It's one of the best movies I've ever seen, and he's a genius in it. So good.
Well, it's hard not to be. Robin Williams, mm-hmm. felt like an uncle.
Sure.
You know, it's like, my mom would just put him on the TV whenever.
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, when he passed away, that was just, like, I called my parents. It was, like, yeah. It felt like, and I, like, I didn't call my parents when, like, I could think of, like, family members, like, distant family members right. that passed away that you don't call your parents for, and then, but him, it was, like, this merits a phone call.
Yeah.
You know, it was big for everybody.
Yeah.
Robin Williams, a lot, yeah, Gilda Radner, I already said, like, you name any of the greats, like, mm-hmm. they were on. Like, my mom just really admired that. And I liked Billy Connolly because, like, he seemed like... he was so complex.
Mm-hmm.
And he was such a man. But he was so, like, so masculine.
Yeah.
Like, he was, like, guy, like, he had a beard. Yeah. And, like, he's, you know, burly. You know, he's just all these things that are very traditionally masculine. And mm-hmm. he was so vulnerable.
Yeah.
And so emotional. And he talked about things where it's, like... guys don't talk about that
right.
where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
And he made it funny.
Right. And definitely not where he's from either. I mean, Glasgow being the kind of conservative place he is, it is. He grew up as a fucking arc welder, like you say, like fucking manly. Like right. He grew up as that guy. And I don't know what he seems though, like he's always had that soul. Like, uh-huh. like he's always that person trying to break out of that, which I think a lot of artists can relate to.
Right, and I think maybe hearing this at a young age, it made me able to identify it in other people at a young mm-hmm. age. I've always been lucky as a human that I've been able to connect with people on an emotional level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was because, like, well, Billy Connolly, well, that kind of reminded me of my Uncle Bill, okay. you know, who was kind of wild and crazy, but was also hilarious and had these funny stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, but Bill was, like, he worked in the oil rigs, mm-hmm. like, in the fields there, and so it was like, but he was still this... So it kind of, those lines that we normally draw that I think take people a really long time to ever knock down yes. weren't ever there.
Mm-hmm.
And I really have to attribute a lot of that to, like, hearing a lot of stand-up, hearing these men emote, mm-hmm. hearing these men make, like, funny of things that happened. And the women, too.
Sure.
Like, I never looked at, like, the woman at the desk at the YMCA as someone... whose name was Joyce. Uh-huh. As someone different than me. It was like, right. Joyce probably has a story.
Mm-hmm.
And... because a lot of these people had, like, these weird odd jobs, and
right.
so it just made me very curious.
No, that's good, and I honestly wish that there, and I'm not saying that there aren't guys who do listen to it in that manner, I wish there were more guys who had that kind of, it's great that there are men comedians that can actually, like, emote and be human and be sensitive, and it's great, but dudes can listen to that and not and totally not get that, that that's going on.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I was raised a lot by my mom as a very sensitive young boy, a big crier. So I noticed it because I'm like, oh, thank God I'm not the only one. But there are dudes who just don't look for that. They don't notice it.
It's because they shut it off.
Of course. Of course.
Right. And I can, as a girl, and I think this is something, I don't know if it's specific to gender, maybe women notice this more. I'm not going to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I should say not as a girl. But for me personally, mm-hmm. and I happen to be a girl, I think that I'm drawn to seeing the emotional side first.
Sure.
I don't okay. know, you know, it's not that I don't have strong logic, but I notice the women, the kind of, the women, the emotional side first. And I think I notice that guys have it too. They kind of just tune it out mm-hmm. right away, though.
Sure.
Or they'll use their logic to justify an emotion
sure.
or to justify why an emotion's there.
Mm-hmm.
And then New York also has this thing, and what you see and constantly, I'm seeing, especially where I live, used condoms in the middle of the street. In the middle of the street, not on the side of the street or somebody tried to get in the gutter or something like that or up against the building or in an alleyway, in the middle of the fucking street, tons of them. And you're like, come on, surely you're not fucking in the middle of the street, you know? I mean, I've been like that before. It's like, oh, I want to fuck you right now, but you know what? Let's get out of harm's way first and we'll get over here. You know, no one's out there. Yeah, fuck you. Come on, right now. Fuck you. That's not happening, you know? I don't know what the explanation is. And if that's not it, then the other situation is equally disconcerting, and that means that, you know, like, once a month, you know, there's some guy somewhere going, oh, fuck, it's Tuesday, and then getting all their used condoms in a pile and going out on the street and, you know, distributing them like some weird urban Johnny Appleseed guy trying to make a chud baby, you know?
I don't know.
Are there... No, it does. Listening to this album, though, was there a point emotionally in the content where all of a sudden you got invested, or was it from the get-go? Like, I'm curious what you're hearing in it, because maybe I'm blocking some of it out. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm hearing it, but...
He takes you on a roller coaster.
Yeah.
I felt over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I felt intellectually all over the place. I'm like, holy shit, did he just pull... Like, he's pulling from so many places. I can't say that... Like, this is somebody... He's operating from every level, from mm-hmm. head to toe, this guy, from, you know, mind to every corner of his mind is just in his stand-up.
Sure.
I don't think that it's logic or emotion. I think that he just nails it.
Yeah.
In a way that's so hard to do.
That's true, because there's one bit that I'd forgotten about completely where he's talking about, God, how did he put it? Well, one where, I can't remember what leads him into this, but the military were wearing camo in New York after 9/11 because, you know, you have to navigate through the thick jungles of New York City.
Yeah.
And then he talks about being guided through by a young tribal boy, and he gives him some soda, and it just slowly becomes racist and about imperialism all of a sudden, and it's like, holy shit, how did he get there? Like, not racist, ironically racist, of course.
Right.
But about imperialism, and it's like, fuck, you're... Okay, I understand
so
that you feel like...
Smart.
It is, and you feel these things, but like, oh my god, you didn't even give me a chance to process where you were going. All of a sudden, you got to this
it's
new thought.
So fast.
And he's like, you don't need to justify it, you're here now.
Yep.
Deal with it.
He doesn't make any excuses, mm-mm. That's just one thing, and he just goes there.
Mm-hmm. And that part makes me really uncomfortable, because he's saying, massa, massa, and I'm like, oh god, what are you doing? I'm like, no, it's got a point to it, it really does, but he will, I don't want to call him a button pusher, because that's fucking trite, but it's exactly what he's doing.
I think he probably wants that. Like, yeah, I mean,
sure.
Any comic wants to push a button.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think, not that I'm pretending to know, like, his process, but I think mm-hmm. that if you're pulling there, it's because you're saying, look, I fucking know some asshole has thought this, and so I'm just gonna drill it home.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is, and not that you've thought this way, but that the people that we're against think this way.
Right.
Or, I don't know, if, it just, I think that, yeah, he just isn't afraid to expose that.
Mm-hmm. And he goes all over the board with it. You couldn't necessarily call him one thing or another.
Mm-mm.
He's obviously a very liberal guy. But there are some thoughts in there that are not typically liberal.
Right.
So, I think it's good for a comedian to come across that way because...
Yeah, it's like libertarian. Like, I don't... Yeah. Or label. The label would probably be rejected.
I think he would
all.
Even hate libertarians.
Yeah, I would not fuck hate, you all. Yeah, he would find something wrong with all of it.
Oh, yeah, of course he would.
This is actually right on board with what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
He sandwiches really serious subjects like religion between bits about disproportionate amount of irony on t-shirts. So it's, yeah, that bit where he's talking about it was the bit on the South. I think it was about Southern mm-hmm. Baptists even. Just he's talking about how racist and, like, you know, religious zealots that are down there. And then he says, but nowhere. And it's so dark. Like, mm-hmm. you feel so defeated
mm-hmm.
by all of this truth.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just swung it up with, but nowhere in the South is there more... there's no higher amount of disproportionate... Like, he just talks about the irony of, like, these people wearing these t-shirts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, the only shopping place that was really, like, that you could go to where I'm from is Walmart.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it felt like the South.
100%.
And it was true. These people were, like, you know, I'm a hot bitch. Or, like, right. And I'm like, this person weighs, like, 300 pounds mm-hmm. and it's... What? Like,
oh, is that the... Okay, so, yeah. I just full disclosure, I didn't get to listen to the full album, but is that where he's talking about God Don't Make No Trash? Is that one
I
of
think
the...
It
yeah, okay,
might
yeah,
be
all right,
one.
So now I'm remembering it. That's how memorable
it's in that, and... Is. Or just, like, and my friends and I actually had this conversation about, like, women that would wear, like, Tweety Bird shirts, like, cut-off mm-hmm. Tweety Bird shirts okay. that would say, I go from zero to bitch in 3 seconds, and we're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So those things he was noticing, I'm like, but also, I think that he finds something wrong on every level.
Oh, absolutely he does. Absolutely. But there's this weird mix of, like, he's judging, he doesn't ever feel like he's necessarily judging people. He's just judging stupidity. He's judging shitty yeah. action. He's judging, yeah. you know, poor reflection on a person's character.
No one's ever personally attacked.
No.
It's just like, this is a thing, mm-hmm. and I'm going to call it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so if you're going to condense why in a couple short sentences, why somebody should listen to this album if, A, they don't know who David Cross is, or let's say they don't know him from Mr. Show, as I did not at all growing up. I didn't know Mr. Show at all. What's a good reason to listen to this album? Like, sit down and listen to this first.
Gosh, I mean, it just really is a good introduction to, I mean, being pulled all across the board, like, on an emotional and a logical level. You just get pulled all across the board, and there's so much talent condensed into such a short album.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very speaking of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, like, I'm not articulating it very well.
No, I know exactly what you're
saying. It's just good. Like,
well, it's not
it's undeniably good.
I think it is, yeah.
Undeniably good comedy, and his opinions are very clear,
mm-hmm.
and it's not for... One thing I really appreciate is that it mm-hmm. wasn't... Sometimes when I'm listening to other comedians, I'm like, they're making work for their album. They're mm-hmm. trying to put together an album. They're trying to sell an album. They're trying to get some
sure.
stuff together. They're working on their material.
Mm-hmm.
Like, never once did I feel worked.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it was just authentic.
Right.
I felt like it was real.
Yeah.
And I think you've gotta, like, at least personally, I feel like you've gotta hold on to that as someone that admires comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you draw, go to that. If
yeah.
you, if that's, you know, it felt like the indie album that, like, you get to go and find, even though he was huge.
Yeah.
It felt like he never lost any of who he was in an album that went commercial.
Yeah. And also, be prepared when you listen to this, it's a 2-disc thing. Like, it's long. It's really long. It's
not long enough.
No, absolutely not. I want to know how long he went. Like, long, but definitely, like, you don't notice how long it is at all, you know? And it's hard when a 2-disc thing, like, drags, but this doesn't. This is fantastic.
Not at all. It felt like it... And I was just waiting for the night. I'm like, oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And for the vinyl nerds listening, in case you're concerned, this was re-released on vinyl by Stand Up Records, so you can get it on vinyl. Limited, though. Like, it's probably a shitload of money. I have no idea.
It's on Spotify.
But, you know, just so everybody knows, because there are, you know... Just want to make sure... Vinyl, they did do it. So where can people find you online?
Right now they mm-hmm. can find me on BuzzFeed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing little goofy viral videos with them.
Awesome.
I'll be workshopping material again. I don't know if I'll at a comedy store or... I'll be workshopping in LA.
Mm-hmm.
I'll post it up on Twitter and, mm-hmm. you know, all of that when I'm doing that. Yeah.
And on Twitter you are?
Josiah Elliott.
All right. Easy enough. No underscores. Nothing to deal with there.
Nope.
Okay, thank God.
Just my name.
All right. It gets too complicated. Two T's. Two L's, two T's in your last name.
Yes.
Right? Okay, good. Wonderful. Well, first of all, thank you for doing this. And thank you guys for listening.
Thank you for having me.
And please listen to this album. And go to BuzzFeed. Do you know Sarah Pocock, by side note? Do you know Sarah Pocock at all?
Maybe.
Cartoonist. She just got a job at BuzzFeed, so that's why I asked.
I'll have to ask one of my friends there. She knows, like, everybody.
Oh, okay, there. Okay. Yeah. Just a side note. I'll cut that stupid aside out. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Thank you for being here. And as always, have a good thing.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit StolenDress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on Facebook.com/ComedyOnVinyl, Twitter @ComedyOnVinyl, and find everything else at ComedyOnVinyl.com.